Welcome to another episode of Conduct Detrimental. I am Dan Lustin, joined as always by Dan Wallach. What's up, Dan?
How you doing, Dan? Well, it's not always, but definitely I'm on a streak of consecutive appearances. It's good to be back in the, you know, sort of in the mix of Conduct Detrimental. You know, being here in Siberia, it's not as easy to stay wired into what's going on throughout the universe of sports law, but somehow these stories find me because they're really, you know, just exciting. You know, the St. Louis Rams relocation case and Watson. I mean, some of these stories you could be on Mars and you've heard about it. So good to be back again.
I guess it bears mentioning our last episode was our most downloaded episode in the Dan Wallach, Dan Lust era. It's actually turning to be the most downloaded episode we've ever had on this podcast in the 4 years doing this podcast. That's the St. Louis Rams relocation lawsuit. If you have not listened to it, I highly recommend it. It's a case that is essentially a multi-billion dollar case that has survived summary judgment. So we're moving closer to trial. Certainly check that out. If you were interested in that podcast and this is your first kind of experience with Conduct Detrimental, Dan and I have planned two additional episodes on the St. Louis Rams relocation lawsuit, including attorneys from similar cases, as well as journalists from St. Louis. So we'll definitely hit that again, but we have a busy week in the world of sports law. We have some breaking news on the Evander Kane front. As you know, we've hit that episode and also a specialty episode. You can look back in our archives, the Evander Kane episode. Some big allegations this week. We're going to have on AJ Perez from Front Office Sports, who had some breaking news late last night. And we're also going to have on, you know, a story that we hit in last week's episode on the NAL front. We'll have a kind of a special guest. If you're reading the subject line, you know who our guest is going to be. But we're going to have our first college athlete on the podcast. First and foremost, Dan, let us talk about Deshaun Watson. Dan, we're 2 weeks into the NFL. I guess I don't want to bury the lead, but Deshaun Watson has not played a snap. He's not sniffed a field, and the Houston Texans have given you every indication that he's not going to be playing for them as Tyrod Taylor, the starting quarterback, goes down with an injury. And guess who gets called? Not Deshaun Watson, you know, the superstar quarterback who's been with the team for the past couple of years. They call up Davis Mills, the rookie from Stanford, who is playing. Deshaun Watson is not sniffing the field. What are your thoughts on this? I have some.
First of all, this is a form, you know, benching a star player with no explanation. You know, one, the Houston Texans obviously are not trying to win football games, because if you're laying your body on the line playing, you know, NFL football and your team isn't giving you the best shot to succeed, I think that's going to be a problem within the locker room. But this has to be with the acquiescence, I think, of Deshaun Watson, because, you know, this is a form of discipline. If this wasn't agreed to between the quarterback, his agent, the team, and the NFL, then there's going to be a problem, because this is de facto discipline, and the NFL has rules under the collective bargaining agreement of only allowing one penalty. The NFL and the team cannot both discipline Deshaun Watson. So if this discipline or this benching is over his objections, and I don't think that it is, because Rusty Harden would have been out there with another news conference. He's been quiet. But if this is over his objection and he wants to be out there on the field with his teammates, then arguably the Texans have already begun levying discipline against Deshaun Watson, and potentially that might tie the NFL's hands under Article 46's one penalty provision. Article 46, Section 4, one penalty. The commissioner and a club will not both discipline a player for the same act or conduct. The commissioner's disciplinary action will preclude or supersede disciplinary action by any club for the same act or conduct. So that means only one can discipline. And if the commissioner renders the discipline, that will override club discipline. But this provision does not address the inverse situation of when the club disciplines the player. And I would interpret the language here in Article 46, Section 4, as potentially precluding the NFL from rendering discipline, because to do so would impose a second penalty for the same act or conduct. And I guess the NFL and the Texans would not be so foolish as to walk into that obvious trap. So I would imagine if you asked Rusty Harden or Deshaun Watson, that they would be okay with what's going on, because otherwise they would have a grievance under Article 46 once the NFL comes in to discipline him. But I would think, just from a common sense perspective, he wanted to be traded. He doesn't want to play for the Texans anymore. I would think he's signed on to this. Otherwise, this would just go sideways immediately.
All I can tell you, Dan, is something doesn't smell right. There's some shenanigans occurring behind the scenes, and I think you are onto something here, because my thoughts on this, the commissioner's exemplus in the NFL, if you don't have to be a lawyer to understand this, it was created for players that have some, you know, investigation going on about them. Maybe criminal charges should come, or there's some messy civil allegations. But the exemplus was created to take a guy off the field. You know, he's not going to be presumed guilty. He's going to be paid his full salary until the NFL completes their investigation. And sometimes that's an indefinite amount of time. Sometimes it's a short investigation. But that's the purpose of the exemplus. If the exemplus is not used on Deshaun Watson, I don't know who it should be used for. He is a guy facing some very serious allegations. The NFL has said they are still in the middle of their investigation. They've interviewed a number of these accusers. They haven't spoke to him. So by all indications, they're still mid-investigation, unless they're saying they're going to wrap this up and they're not even speaking to Deshaun Watson. But I can't imagine that's the case. So, you know, we saw at the beginning of camp, the NFL put out a statement that he was not being disciplined, that, you know, in theory, if there was a game tomorrow, he could play. So the NFL hasn't even put him on the exemplus. They don't want to give the optics that they're even potentially suspending him. Meanwhile, the Houston Texans, and this is the part that just kind of drives me nuts, you know, they're benching him, which, I don't know. I'm not the biggest fan of Deshaun Watson. I don't, you know, I'm not a Houston Texans fan. I'm not a Deshaun Watson fan necessarily. But it seems patently unfair if a guy's going to be, you know, innocent until proven guilty, right? He has some presumption of innocence, and the NFL hasn't disciplined him. How can he just sit on the bench and be inactive? It's something which I've tried to make clear in my thoughts on social media. A little bit unprecedented in sports, right? Melvin Gordon is a running back for the San Diego Chargers, probably about 2 years ago at this point. I guess it was the LA Chargers at the time. But no, he was holding out because he wanted a new contract and he didn't report to camp. So he got fined and fined until he eventually had to show up. And I think he said that was a mistake in hindsight. Same thing happened with Le'Veon Bell. He held out from the Steelers and then he eventually left the team. But there's always this kind of, you know, you either show up and you play or you don't show up and you get fined. We're in this weird period of roster limbo where Watson has showed up seemingly ready, willing, and able to play. They're paying him his full salary, but he's not playing. I can't think of a historical comparison for it. So the only thing I could say, Dan, and to your point, maybe the Texans and the NFL have some secret agreement where they're keeping him off the field. But the NFL, at least to me, as long as I've been following football, they're not in the business of just allowing their shield, you know, the brand of the NFL to be harmed. They haven't sent a signal from a PR perspective, hey, we're disciplining him, quote unquote, like Major League Baseball have. The Texans haven't said it either. We have this kind of like smoke and mirrors. He's kind of indirectly being punished. I don't know what to call us, but he's in roster limbo. So I don't really think it's fair to Watson. I don't think it's fair to the Texans because they're burning a roster spot. If he was on the exemplist, they would take him off. They could replace him and have another quarterback on the roster, mind you. And now they're forced to start a rookie, Davis Mills, instead of maybe a Cam Newton or someone on the bench that would be, or someone off the street that would be filling that spot. So something doesn't smell right. I can't put my finger on it, but it certainly doesn't make sense to me.
Well, there is some historical precedent here, Dan. You said that it's not fair to the Texans. It's not fair to Deshaun Watson, but here's another, you know, constituency that it's not fair to: his teammates. And the historical precedent I'm going to point to is the last regular season game last year when the Eagles played the Giants. Jalen Hurts was playing quarterback for the Eagles, and the coaching staff pulled him early in the fourth quarter for Nate Sudfeld. And there was a mutiny on the sidelines when that happened. Now, that wasn't a disciplinary situation, but clearly the Eagles were trying to tank the game to improve their draft pick and prevent the Giants from winning the division. But when you don't put out your best players, you're sending a message to the rest of the team that winning is not the priority. Now, I want to go back to this notion of the exemplist. The league has been investigating Deshaun Watson for 5 to 6 months. They've been about as active in investigating him as Tony Busby has been in prosecuting the civil case. This whole notion of Deshaun Watson being placed in limbo is a byproduct of what? A police investigation? No, a civil lawsuit that the plaintiff's attorney, Tony Busby, has not taken a single deposition in. He filed these 23 lawsuits roughly in April of 2021, and we're now almost a half a year into the filing of the litigation. He hasn't pressed forward to take Watson's deposition. To my knowledge, there has been no active prosecution of these lawsuits. So I would take the position that unless there's some smoking gun or some new evidence that's going to come out very, very soon, the NFL doesn't have enough, in my view, to place Deshaun Watson on the commissioner's exempt list. And this would set a terrible precedent that the mere filing of civil litigation is the sort of the sine qua non of what justifies or gives good cause for being on the exempt list. I think the standard should be a little bit higher. At the very least, a police investigation, witness interviews, real evidence, the filing of a complaint. And you and I have, we're kind of repeating ourselves on this point because we talked about about this a few episodes back, but there has not been any police report, incident reports, or real hard evidence other than the filing of a civil complaint based upon identical copycat complaints with identical language filed by 23 people represented by the same attorney. So I'm not passing judgment on the merits. I'm just saying that there may not, in my view, be enough there to render Deshaun Watson in jeopardy of being suspended or placed on the exempt list without some additional legwork being done by Tony Busby, who has done nothing to date except hold press conferences.
Dan, you know, people that have been listening to podcasts, they know, I mean, it's, you can only really view this case as one of two ways, right? There's some big extortion or collusion for these 20 plus women that allegedly don't know each other and, you know, having these civil complaints that they're attesting to. It's either some big conspiracy or, you know, there's some truth to these allegations, right? It just, there's really only two ways to put it. So I don't know. You know, I guess we can agree to disagree. I think, you know, we can look no further than Major League Baseball with the precedent set by civil allegations from a female accuser, from a star baseball player, and they took Trevor Bauer off the field. He's now ruled ineligible for the remainder of the regular season and the postseason. And that's one accuser, right? It's not 20 plus accusers. So, you know, again, different sports, different protocol, different standards, different commissioners. But, you know, we as fans, right, we look at the league and their disciplinary protocols, and the Major League Baseball wanted to send a message, a swift, clean, and strong message that Trevor Bauer will not be on the field as long as this is hanging over his head. And the NFL doesn't want to do that. So I just, there's something different going on. And it's also possible, which I've heard from, you know, people behind the scenes, that maybe there is some truth to this potential, you know, FBI investigation of a potential extortion of Deshaun Watson by one of the Tony Busby clients, one of the victims. So maybe that's what the NFL is looking at. All we know is that there's some smoke screen. We don't really know what's going on behind the scenes. And certainly there's a lot of things that don't add up here.
Sure, sure. And that kind of, I think, reinforces the, you know, my point a little bit that, you know, it gets to be a real slippery slope when, you know, civil allegations, you know, sort of create, you know, a cloud of suspicion and doubt around somebody within the NFL community for purposes of suspensions. I think the real date that we're looking for, you know, moving ahead is the trade deadline, because if he's still on the Houston Texans when the trade deadline passes, then it's going to change the conversation around Deshaun Watson's, you know, happiness with being in this situation. I think he's okay with the current situation with the understanding that the team will move him. And if they don't move him by the trade deadline, that means he will have spent an entire year on dry dock, not playing. And then next year when he's traded, potentially he could be facing another stay on the commissioner's exempt list with the possibility of being disciplined and suspended for an indeterminate number of games. So something has to give very soon or this is going to get ugly. And when it gets ugly, we'll have another episode or 10 episodes about it.
You know, he doesn't get credit for time served on the bench. No, that's not how it works, Dan.
The NFL could do whatever the NFL wants to do, as we all know. And you would think so, but
I know,
who knows?
No. Yeah, I listen, it is what it is. We'll keep a pin on it. So listen, moving to topic number two, we can talk about Watson all day, but I think that the breaking news in the sports law landscape, and it was given to us courtesy of AJ Perez at Front Office Sports. We're going to have AJ on the podcast. He's on vacation in Mexico, but has agreed to a brief appearance on the podcast. He's a return guest. But the long and short,
it must be raining. It must be raining there, right? If it was sunny out, you think he'd be giving us the time of day?
No, he definitely would not be. So long and short, AJ posted last night, this is a story, the Evander Kane saga is not going away that quickly. Allegations of betting and throwing games that he played in by his estranged wife. It's an allegation that now includes some, you know, domestic violence allegations, sports betting allegations, sexual assault allegations. But the source of these allegations is one person. It is his estranged wife in the middle of divorce proceedings. So you have to take all this with a grain of salt, but they're certainly loaded allegations. Dan, any thoughts generally before we kick it to AJ to explain his breaking story?
This is the story that has like no end in sight. And all of this is outside of the National Hockey League. All of it is outside of the police investigation. This is simply a domestic dispute that has no end in sight. And it's just it's like a pendulum swinging back and forth. And we're responding to every bit of information. But these are explosive allegations and we have to cover it.
And with that said, let us turn it over to AJ Perez with Front Office Sports. AJ, welcome to Conduct Detrimental. As we've been told, you're on vacation in Tulum, so we appreciate you jumping on the podcast. We certainly have some breaking news on the Evander Kane front. You want to let us know what's going on and what you found out this past week?
a court document hit Tuesday, and I was able to obtain it. It was on the online docket that Anna Kane finally filed for her protection order. Previously, Evander Kane did in August. It also looks, according to the documents and also the online docket, that, yeah, she has also changed lawyers. So I don't know if this is a new strategy for her, but there was a lot of explosive allegations so far that, you know, including, you know, I didn't tweet about this, but there are also going to be exhibits that have that likely will include, they looks like they'll include pictures of the alleged abuse of one of the incidents.
So the incidents that we're talking about, I think it's allegedly three, right? Is it an incident of battery? I know you tweeted today about an incident where Anna Kane allegedly was, Evander tried to punch her in the face and allegedly hit their daughter. And then there's an allegation of some sexual assault. It's really kind of disturbing allegations, but, you know, so there's still allegations. As you note, AJ, no criminal case. There's no NHL discipline. These are all filed right in the divorce court as part of these divorce.
Correct. So that and this follows with Evander Kane made some didn't go into him at the time, but in August when he filed his protection order, the application included a lot of claims of that she abused him physically and also that she lied about her miscarriage. And according to court documents, ones from yesterday, she's still pregnant with the baby girl.
AJ, this has, in some ways, in my mind, some parallels to the Trevor Bauer situation where the case or the proceeding played out in a domestic violence or in a non-criminal setting. Where is the Santa Clara Police Department on this issue right now? Is there an open investigation by some law enforcement agency in Santa Clara?
Yeah, it's hard for me to reach out, but I reached out today to the San Jose Police. They used to own a home, a $3 million home in San Jose, which was pretty much, not lack of a better word, was kind of repossessed by the banks who held the notes. Anna Kane was forced to vacate that property in July. And so it would be Santa Clara County, it would be the Sheriff's Department and or the San Jose Police who would be doing the investigating. I have no indication that they want such. I have not been able to get a hold of her lawyer. So I don't know if her lawyer has reached out on her behalf, her new lawyer, to the authorities. So I have no information as of yet as to whether a criminal proceeding or criminal investigation is underway.
Well, you're the, you know, sort of the king of public records requests. I remember working with you a few years ago. I was your delivery man in picking up a public records request in connection with Ezekiel Elliott. By the way, you still owe me, you know, $10 on that. I haven't forgotten.
My dad's the court runner for this case. So, yeah.
Okay. So the question I have for you is, do you have a public records request that you filed with the police department to see if an incident report or anything has been filed in connection with law enforcement to sort of back up her civil allegations?
Not until we didn't have, you know, there was no dates, and there's even some of these allegations are cover a time period. It could be as long as a month. So it's hard to nail down. Now that these records are this filing hit, I will be able to seek that out.
I can't pick it up for you this time. I'm in Siberia, Russia, so you're on your own.
We got my dad's there, so we're good.
Kim Wallach in Siberia, AJ in Mexico. I'm the only one on the home front. AJ, we know your time is limited as you're away on vacation, so we greatly appreciate you taking this call with us. I'll leave you with this. October 16th is the San Jose Sharks season opener. Right now, at the end of September, we got about 10 days left in the month. Do you have any indication as to whether or not Evander Kane's going to be able to play come the opener, if there's any discipline coming, where they stand in the investigation? Any update on that front?
I've kept the NHL apprised of my reporting as I did yesterday. Still no comment out of them, but their outside investigator they hired is doing what he can to find out. And this is, I'm sure he'll get the documents that I got. And the interesting thing today, Wednesday, is Sharks Media Day. So that means the players are meeting with reporters there in San Jose.
I have a sneaking suspicion that Evander Kane will not be available for comment on this case. But AJ, listen, welcome back to Contra Connect Mental. I know it's been a long time. We really appreciate your time, especially when you're in Mexico. So we'll see you again, buddy. Appreciate it.
No problem, man. Talk to you guys later.
Thank you.
Thank you, AJ.
Bye.
So that was AJ Perez of Front Office Sports. If you want to follow AJ, he's a fantastic follow on Twitter and Instagram. He is @byAJPerez. You know, we only had AJ for a brief period of time. We apologize for some of the reception. AJ is literally on vacation in Tulum, Mexico. I don't know if he's at, my wife and I went there. We were looking at the ruins. We were on the beach. Tulum's a fantastic place. Not really a fantastic place to record a podcast, but record a fantastic place.
Are you sure he was really in Mexico? He sounded like he was on Apollo 13 about to take off to, you know, Mars. I mean, it sounded like a countdown from NASA control. It was a lot of weird feedback. But the most important thing is he gave us some really important information about the status, a potential status of a criminal investigation. He's looking into that. And I think the National Hockey League will, you know, begin to have its antenna up, if it hasn't already, about Evander Kane. And there could be an investigation parallel with a police investigation.
AJ, maybe he was just in a time rush, but you know, if you didn't see my post today or AJ's post or his story, you should check it out. But here's, they're very messy allegations, and I'll go over them, you know, trigger warning. What I'm about to say is very graphic, but it is an allegation from Anna Kane, his estranged wife, against Evander Kane. So, you know, we talk about sexual allegations, sexual assault allegations, domestic violence allegations. You know, the messy, give you at least as much as I feel comfortable talking about in the podcast. But, you know, the allegations here are that Evander Kane and his wife, Anna Kane, essentially had a baby that died, was born prematurely and passed away. And in a period of time after, you know, this tragic moment in their life, Anna Kane is alleging that she was told by doctors she could not engage in any type of sexual intercourse. She felt uncomfortable doing so. And the allegation of sexual assault is that Evander Kane forced himself on his wife, Anna Kane, in a violent manner against her will, and essentially said, "You're my wife. Rape is not possible. So I'm going to do what I want." It's certainly messy. NHL is not going to want to have any part in that, but that's what's now put out there in a public filing. And AJ found it, reported it. It's certainly relevant to his status as an NHL hockey player. And then these assault allegations, Anna Kane is subject of a restraining order that Evander Kane filed and said that she assaulted him. And now she's coming back and saying, you know, he was physically aggressive with me in these sexual interactions. But beyond that, there's an interaction that I went out with the hockey wives. I went drinking. I had a glass of wine, and that Evander Kane found me and smelled alcohol in my breath, and that physically assaulted me and slammed me up against a wall. And then there's another just kind of heinous allegation. Again, all allegations, they're kind of going back and forth, but an allegation that at some point in time, Evander Kane was trying to strike, Anna Kane was trying to punch her and actually missed with a punch and actually struck their daughter in the face with a punch. And this is the same daughter who is the subject of a child custody hearing. So, you know, do I like talking about this? Do we like talking about these messy allegations? No. We are a sports law podcast. We covered the Trevor Bauer case extensively. We're covering Deshaun Watson extensively. People care about these stars of all these sports. So we have to cover these messy allegations, and they certainly will have a bearing on whether or not he's on the ice. So sexual assault and physical assault allegations notwithstanding, there's still this betting allegation that's floating out there, whether or not he bet on and through games he played in. Now, Dan, you ask me, do I think that these trifecta of allegations, physical assault, sexual assault, gambling allegations, there's a part of me that thinks, you know, someone's throwing the kitchen sink at him. Maybe it doesn't help his case that there are these three loaded allegations against him. Maybe I'd feel more confident in these allegations if it was just gambling, if it wasn't anything else. Now it's kind of a mixed bag. So you ask me whether or not he's going to be on the ice on October 16th. I don't know. It depends on the NHL's tolerance for this messy news story. You know, like clearly the NFL is okay with Deshaun Watson. Major League Baseball was not. It's anyone's guess what the NHL is going to do, but that date is looming very close. October 16th, the San Jose Sharks season opener. Dan, do you think he's going to be on the ice?
Well, I mean, there's a lot we don't know about the NHL's investigation or lack thereof at this point. So it's a difficult question to answer. I know some of his teammates would probably prefer to see him not take the ice with them in October. If the NHL hasn't conducted or commenced an investigation here, I don't know on what basis that they can suspend him just based upon these civil allegations. Well, you know, it's very, very interesting how the public perceives football versus baseball versus hockey. Trevor Bauer and Deshaun Watson, there's this overriding sense that, oh, you can't put them out on the field because there'll be this huge public outcry. I'm not saying hockey fans are indifferent, but I get a sense that this is not on the same level of, you know, creating, you know, this unrest and outcry from the fan base. But more importantly, what matters isn't the public perception or what fans say or think. It's where the NHL is in the investigative process. And at this point, betting allegations are nothing more than allegations, unless and until his wife cooperates with the National Hockey League or the NHL can, you know, gather some evidence to potentially corroborate any of those allegations. So when you talk about the trifecta of allegations, I'd like to focus on what's provable, what evidence there is in the public domain. So the betting stuff seems a little bit too speculative and not clear and present enough to really rise to the level of the type of evidence that the NHL should be alarmed by. What is more alarming is a sexual assault that could be backed up by, you know, witness statements, photographs, maybe a police investigation. And I don't know that the National Hockey League is going to step out in front of the San Jose Police Department and conduct their own, if not parallel investigation, to do their own investigation separate and apart and before either the San Jose or Santa Clara law enforcement authority. So I think the NHL might take a wait and see approach and see how this shakes out with law enforcement before taking any action to sideline Evander Kane, no matter what his teammates would prefer or what the team would prefer. But certainly leave with pay is an option here.
I think the one thing, and we should, Dan, and you and I should note, the only one that is in possession of these legal papers, as AJ mentioned, is AJ Perez. And he said he gave them to the NHL. We have not seen this full legal filing, but keep in mind, right? And this is the whole point of the Deshaun Watson case, the same point with the Trevor Bauer case, and now the same case with Evander Kane. If you make a legal filing, and if you lie into that legal filing, you risk the ramifications of potential perjury, lying under oath in a court document. You know, you could say someone's not credible and they have maybe an agenda, but if they say something under oath, they say something in a sworn document, there is some level of credibility and reliability to it. So as far as I'm aware, as of today, we're recording this on Wednesday, September 22nd, the allegations contained in this domestic violence restraining order by Evander Kane speak to physical violence and speak to potential sexual assault allegations. I know there is some indication of maybe some gambling debts, but we knew about that because Evander Kane already filed those under his bankruptcy filing. So we know there are potential gambling debts. The only source of knowledge that we have that Evander Kane bet on the San Jose Sharks to lose in games that he played in was from Anna Kane's Instagram story. Last I checked, you cannot be hit with perjury for lying on an Instagram story. I'm very interested to see, and hopefully we get this from AJ, hopefully the documents come out, if Anna Kane was comfortable making that allegation at some point and in a civil case. Obviously it doesn't have any relevance to a domestic violence filing. I don't think it would. But to me, until she makes that filing under some type of sworn statement, I don't know how much credibility that has. I mean, I don't think she would, you'd make something like that up, and maybe you would. I don't know this history of their relationship. Keep in mind, right, we're talking about this trifecta of allegations. Two of the three categories have been now attested to in a legal document. The third one, the gambling allegations, has not been. So, you know, just we're the lawyers. We tell you, you know, all we can, but we don't know if any of these are true or not true. Yeah. But two of them, I think, have some more level of reliability than the gambling allegations. I do feel that way.
Yeah, Dan, I got to be honest with you. I feel like very uncomfortable even covering this story because, you know, just from all, you know, angles, Evander Kane's, you know, professional and personal life, you know, seemed to be unraveling at once. He's in a bankruptcy proceeding. He's lost his home. There are these awful allegations about gambling, sexual assault. This is a player whose career is in jeopardy. He's not as critical and important of a player as he might have been earlier in his career. And, you know, I feel terrible about what's happening here. And I just don't find this story to be one that is as essential to cover as something like Deshaun Watson that involves, you know, truly the intersection of sports and law, you know, collective bargaining agreements. And then, you know, of course, the NFL case, we obviously want to cover that pillar to post, but this is just bad all around. It has a very TMZ-ish quality to it. And, you know, if it were a different player, would we be talking about this? And it just, I'm very uncomfortable with it because it does have in some ways a clickbait aspect to it, because really who cares, you know, on a national level about Evander Kane? He's clearly an impact player for the San Jose Sharks, but it's the allegations and sort of the betting and the sexual assault that is really driving the conversation here. So I'll be very happy to move on. But more importantly, I hope he pulls his life together, because one of the truisms about, you know, a career in athletics is that Father Time is undefeated. And his career is really winding down to the last couple of years. If there's any truth behind any of the three allegations, his career is basically done. And I hope that these allegations are not true. And I'd be very content never to have to talk about Evander Kane again, because I don't wish any of these things to be true.
Yeah, no, just briefly, you know, not that I have any intent on covering the Evander Kane stuff either, but when we talk about in the history of sports law, history of sports, very few players are even alleged to have bet and thrown games and lost games on purpose for financial gain. So, you know, I think that's anyone that's a hockey fan of any of the teams in the NHL, certainly that's relevant, right? Certainly that's part of it. It now has kind of spurned and spawned itself into assault and sexual assault and you know, violence and allegations of a baby or young child being struck. Do I like talking about it? No. Do I like talking about Deshaun Watson's sexual assault allegations? No. Do I like talking about Trevor Bauer's assault allegations? No. But, and we pride ourselves as covering anything and everything at the intersection of sports and law. And Dan, that's where we find ourselves. So it's certainly not something that is anyone's cup of tea. You know, when I post stuff about this particular story on online, Dan, I'll just candidly kind of behind the scenes, I can see the metrics of people that the amount of people that share the article, but don't actually like publicly retweet it. But nobody really, people I think are nervous to interact with the story because of this, what you're saying, this kind of shady element of it behind the scenes. But you know, Dan, it's still newsworthy. I think it's still important for any fan of the San Jose Sharks, any fan of NHL hockey. You know, certainly this could have ramifications throughout the league. And it's sad to see someone's life playing like this out in the public realm. But if we're going to cover sports and law, we can, and we're going to be the two people at the space. We can't run away from stories that are of a sensitive nature.
We're not going to let anybody else into the space. It's just us two.
And everyone that covers stuff are kind of judgmental, and everybody in the whole world.
I'll be happy to turn this podcast into the St. Louis podcast for the next couple of months, because I think we've got an exciting story here. I remember when the NFL was on trial with the United States Football League in the mid-1980s, when Donald Trump made the ill-fated decision as the owner of the New Jersey Generals to go head-to-head with the National Football League, and the NFL lost at the trial and paid the grand sum of $1 in damages, which was trebled under the federal antitrust laws. It's not that frequent that the National Football League has an actual trial facing the kind of exposure that they're facing in this case. Cases like this come around, you know, once in a very long time. I don't remember when the last one was, but this stands out as one of the few instances where the NFL is actually on trial and the way it does business is on trial. And I find this story to be particularly fascinating and exciting. And I can't wait until we speak with Jim Quinn, who's representing the city of Oakland in an almost identical case playing out in California.
Let us take this time to remind everyone that this podcast is sponsored by Themis Bar Review. As we cover the intersections of sports and law, Themis covers the intersections of law students and prepping for the bar. They are the top bar prep company ever. I said it, ever. There was no one that compares. Now we move on to our third segment of the podcast. If you looked at this, the title of this episode, obviously you know who we're talking to, but you know, I want to give us some excitement. We're speaking to the first ever on Conduct Detrimental, the first ever college athlete on our podcast. And it's not only a college athlete, it's an athlete that is a starting quarterback for Florida Atlantic University. That's Nikosi Perry. We talked about his deal and we talked about him last week that he signed with Isla Mirada Beer Company. Dan and I, after the podcast, had the lovely opportunity to speak with Jose and Brian, our friends over at Isla Mirada. And they explained that there was a really interesting backstory about how this deal came to be, how Nikosi became the first athlete in the country at the college level to sign a NIL deal with an alcohol company, which Dan, you and I have spoke about. We didn't think that schools would allow this, but to the extent the school says it's okay, you know, and which apparently they did here, Nikosi Perry set this bar of allowing athletes into that space. And maybe, Dan, we see that now into the gambling space, maybe to the cannabis space, but Nikosi Perry is certainly a trailblazer in this field. So certainly the opportunity to talk with him is something that we couldn't pass up. Dan, what are your thoughts on Nikosi before we, kick it over to the interview with him?
What fascinates me about this NIL deal is that for Isla Mirada Beer Company, they've already struck gold. Nikosi Perry doesn't have to do a thing for the rest of the season. And the investment in him with this deal has already paid off, because for a couple of days, people were talking about Isla Mirada beer, and you can't buy that kind of commercial advertising. So I think it was a stroke of marketing genius on behalf of Isla Mirada Beer Company. I want to talk to the company executives and kind of get into their thought process as to why they decided to strike when they struck. And you know, I just think of all the deals that are out there, this is the one of the dozens, if not more, that I actually remember.
For scheduling purposes, Dan, I know we're getting late in Siberian time. So we're going to actually have Mike, our podcast producer extraordinaire, join us for the interview with Nikosi. But Dan, I'll be sure to represent the Dans of this podcast in your honor. And with that said, we will turn it over to our interview with Nikosi Perry, starting quarterback at Florida Atlantic University. Nikosi Perry, the first college athlete on Conduct Detrimental. Welcome to the show, my man.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, listeners of the show will know we mentioned you about a week ago at this point. You're the first college athlete in the country ever to sign a deal with an alcohol company. That's Isla Mirada. And with us today, in addition to Nikosi Perry, starting quarterback at Florida Atlantic, we have Jose Herrera, as well as Nikosi's marketing agent, Trent Robeson. Jose, welcome. You put this deal together in Trent, so we're lovely to have you guys on.
Thank you.
I'm happy to be here. Appreciate it.
Kosi, I got a bone to pick with you before we get into the real stuff. You ready for this?
Yeah, I'm ready.
You lit up my legal alma mater, Fordham, last week. You really did a number on it. It's not a laughing matter. This is assault that you performed on the football field.
I wish it would have been better, to be honest.
That is not helping your case here, okay? Faulted the team even worse than you did. First and foremost, you know, on our show, we talk a lot about NIL deals. We talk about the future of college sports. We had a, you know, I'm not sure you know, but there was a United States Supreme Court case talking about how athletes should be compensated, whether they should be treated like employees. So we're in a world of change in the world of college sports and compensation. Now, whether you realize it at the time or not, you were signing a deal that was a historic deal, the first deal of its type in the country for really an alcoholic sponsorship. So I know we've spoke to Jose and Brian at Isla Mirada, but I guess if you can, you kind of have a history in the state of Florida where NIL kind of started, but maybe you can give us just kind of a window into how this deal came to be. And, you know, then I guess we'll talk about this landscape of Florida, this hotbed of NIL deals.
Started last season, we were hearing about possible NIL things, like they were possibly going to start paying the college players. We didn't know what to believe or not. Once I met Trent, he talked to me and said he was going to start, him and his partner was going to start their NIL business, and he said he would take care of me. And once it started, it really hit the fan and it took off. And as for Florida, there's a lot of good guys in Florida. As far as De'Aaron King and Mackenzie Milton, that's really active out there on social media and stuff like that. And you can see the impact it has.
So you were at Miami for your first 4 years, 2017 through 2020, and you transferred to Florida Atlantic as a grad transfer. So you've been at two schools now, you know, within the state of Florida. I guess, and we should mention too, you met Trent Wall. I think, Trent, I looked up a little bit on your background. I'm not a total creeper, but I got to do my research for the podcast. You were the equipment manager on the Miami team.
Yeah, I started as an equipment manager at University of Miami. That's how Cozy and I kind of met. I worked with the quarterbacks.
So this is a little bit of like a Drew Rosenhaus, Young Rock scenario here. This is what we're talking about?
Absolutely.
You know what? I did not know this about you, Trent, but that's how I started my freshman year at FAU. I was the equipment manager for the FAU football team for the quarterbacks. That's really funny.
This is like looking into window into the future, Trent. You're going to be the CEO of a beer company very shortly. And who you just heard from was Jose Herrera at Isla Mirada. So when Trent is saying that Jose reached out to him, now we have basically all three people that put together this deal.
Again, Kosi, thanks for joining us today. This is awesome. I mean, this really blew up big. You know, a week ago, everybody started talking about this. You know, name, image, and likeness was a big deal. July 1, we were excited to see where name, image, and likeness was going to go for a number of schools. There was a lot of talks about, you know, the big schools, Alabama, you know, your big SEC schools. But this was front page. You know, this was the first alcoholic company deal with an athlete. So, you know, kudos and congrats for this deal, guys. This is absolutely incredible. I would love to hear just a little bit more about, you know, you guys talked about how the connection was made, but a little bit more on the specifics here. So, you know, we see that it's a deal, a partnership deal, a sponsorship deal here where you and Isla Mirada are working together and you're promoting their brand through social media. We've already seen a couple of their posts. I see on Trent's LinkedIn and Isla Mirada's, you know, social media posts, like you're posing in front of the Isla Mirada beer company, you know, you sitting on a boat holding Isla Mirada beer. How did this kind of come to be? When you're talking about specifics, you're talking about working with them. What exactly is this deal? What do you have to do? What are you required to do?
As for me, I really let Trent handle all of the business part and the negotiating part of it. But I'm here to, like you say, promote the business and make sure they get the extra exposure that they want and they need. I was very excited to be a part of it. And to be honest, I really didn't expect it to blow up the way it did. I almost knew 100% that I would be the first athlete to sign an alcoholic deal, but I did not expect it to blow up the way it did, especially the day after.
When we saw it get tweeted out and we saw everything kind of post, we were more taken aback. We were like, this was kind of, it kind of flew under the radar almost, right? Like, you know, yeah. Jose wasn't out there posting like, oh, we're about to get, you know, the first alcoholic deal ever, you know, things like that. It was kind of like people saw the deal and were like, oh, wait, I think this is the first time that there's an alcoholic name, image, likeness deal. So then it really started to unravel there. So I think what's exciting too, and I'm curious, maybe Jose, you have more of an idea of what this is going to look like. The reports were saying that there is at least one event per year that you have to attend. Is there something in the books here, or are we looking for?
Is this the event?
you know, everything is about business. And one of the great things that I like working with Nicosi and Trent is that we definitely said it's business, right? We're both going to mutually benefit from each other. So I'm trying to get kind of work with one of our big accounts, whether it's Total Wine or Winn-Dixie or Publix, especially when Nicosi has time. I don't want to do it during the football season because, of course, you know, school and sports are number one, and I don't want him to mess that up. You know, we've had the idea of possibly doing an event in Ocala in his hometown at one of the local grocery stores. I'm a family guy. Like I've always said, I'm a Florida guy. Everything worked out with Nicosi that he's a family guy. He's a local guy from Ocala. And he's been to my two favorite universities, you know, the one that my wife works at and the one that's my alma mater. So we want to keep it local and we want to keep it so that he can get the maximum exposure, whether it's in Ocala, Miami, like, you know, we're going to leave it up to him as well.
The interesting part about this deal, and this is why, you know, Jose, you're talking about Florida and Trent, you know, you obviously are at Miami and Nicosi, you've been at Miami and Florida Atlantic, as Jose is laying out. Us as lawyers in this space, anybody that's following the NIL space, we know very well that Florida was at the forefront of this movement. So California, we're not going to do the whole history, but in 2019, California was the first state to pass some type of athlete compensation laws. But that deal for California didn't go into effect until 2023. So what Florida did is they saw what California did and they said, you know what, we could do this in Florida, but let's make that effective date that this is going to go into effect, July 1st of 2021. And then all these states started copying July 1st. And then kind of the races were off. From the way I see it, and I've, you know, been pretty vocal about it, Florida is not just pushing the envelope in terms of dates. July 1st, 2021 is an invention of Florida's, but they're also kind of pushing the envelope on student athlete empowerment, right? You have the deal that occurs over at, you know, Miami, you know, with this UFC gym that these athletes are going to get paid $500 a month if they opt in. Florida State's got a similar deal that they did as well. And then you have guys like De'Arik King and Mackenzie Milton who are, you know, putting themselves out there as being two of the more vocal and most marketable guys in the space because they're putting their name in the front of this NIL movement. So, you know, I certainly love to see it. But, you know, Nicosi, you mentioned you have tons of friends, obviously, in the state of Florida, a bunch of athletes. What do you think it means for the state of Florida from an NIL level to be kind of at the forefront of this movement? You think it's going to help recruiting? You think it's going to help these schools and the SEC, the ACC, all those type of schools?
In the near future, I definitely think it will help recruiting once it kicks off more and the young guys actually see that they can make money starting in college. They don't have to wait to go to the biggest school to try to make it to the NFL, that type of way to make their money. And I think this is a great thing for all Florida athletes and Florida schools.
I definitely agree. I think that's awesome, especially the local level of what you're talking about, Jose. I mean, I'm a Syracuse grad and Syracuse revolves around Syracuse sports. So as big as like University of Syracuse is, when you're in Syracuse, it's a local feel, right? It's all local companies, local businesses. So I love that aspect, especially given what Dan just said about how big it was in Florida and that Florida was the trailblazer. I mean, I think it's incredible to have that local feel. And to that same aspect, Cosi, do you talk with De'Arik King? Do you talk with Milton? Do you like talk with some of these guys? How's the locker room talk with your own teammates about your name, image, and likeness deal? You know, you working with Almirada, how's that working? Are you, you know, Trent, are you trying to have, you know, some of Kosi's teammates? Like, how's that working?
Can I say this before we put you on the spot? There's a really fun, like, I mean, if you're in the NFL, right, if you win the MVP and you're a quarterback, there's usually this like kind of fun thing, like you take care of your offensive linemen, right? You give them like a couple Rolexes, like you make them happy because those are the guys that are protecting you. We've never had this conversation at the collegiate level, right? If the quarterback is making money, how does he make it up to his fellow teammates, right? And same thing with you, Trent. We'll put you on the spot after. Get ready for the hot seat. But, you know, you have friends. Obviously, you know, Jose, Trent, you guys have hooked the Kosi up. But then there's these conversations that might occur between teammates, like, hey, and you get all these deals. Maybe you can hook me up with the guys that gave you those deals. So it's kind of a new dynamic. But and to Mike's question, like, are those conversations, right? Like, is your center, your left tackle, are those guys telling you, hey, where's my Almirada money? Like, wait, is that coming to me anytime soon? Are those conversations happening?
I do have some teammates that ask about the marketing agents that I have, and they want to be a part of it or curious about what it is. But as far as the Almirada beer, I definitely have teammates asking about that. They want some. Especially the ones over 21, they want a case of
beer. They want the beer. They don't care about the money. They just want
the beer. They're not expecting to get the same deals I get. But they're definitely, I think they're enjoying it almost as much as me, because it's also shedding light on the university and on the players on the team.
They say that winning cures everything. And when you're lighting up my Fordham Rams, it's going to be a good mood.
Really quick, Dan, going to that, we are, I'm just going to, breaking news, I usually don't do this, but we are looking for a female athlete at Florida Atlantic University to give her, to promote equality and do the same kind of deal that we did with Nikosi. And he gave Trent some names, and Trent worked with me, and it's not just about football. Like, everybody's focusing on football and basketball. Like, it's not about that. We want to make sure that as a business, and we're not boosters, we're not anything as a business. It's literally a business transaction that we want to pick the best female athlete. And Nikosi and Trent both went down to the Keys to do the photo shoot, and they saw our lifestyle. And when this blew up, I texted, I'm like, hey guys, I need a female athlete. And right then and there, like, Nikosi and Trent, found me a couple, and we're interviewing them, getting to know them better. I had the chance of knowing Nikosi here at UM. So the next step is picking the right person. So, but it goes to your story, Dan, that it's not like, that Nikosi and Trent are also helping other athletes, especially female athletes in swimming and or beach volleyball or whatever sport it may be.
And I think it's important that is, this NIL, new wave of thing. It's like the Wild West. Anything could really happen. And like we saw with Cozy, where, we expected it to be on Miami Herald and Sun Sentinel. And I had gotten out of my class and see Sports Center, ESPN and USA Today, going about it. So I think it's a lot of people are doing deals, but I think if it's something of one of its first kind, which is just kind of this situation was, where it was the first ever, I think being the first ever holds a lot of weight, especially in NIL, and a lot more avenues open up.
Trent, you must have seen our July 1st episode, because the kickoff of our episode was Will Smith's Wild Wild West, the intro to that song.
We could sing it for you if you want. Yeah.
Dan loves singing it, but it's true. It is the Wild West.
So I guess, Trent, I wasn't lying. You're going to be on the hot seat for a minute here. I guess, in this whole context of NIL, right, and this is why it popped up across our radar. I can't speak to why ESPN thought it was interesting. I know why lawyers thought it was interesting. We spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about, which I'm not going to ask you to comment on, because I don't know if you have affiliation with them, but this market of Barstool athletes, whether or not Barstool is a company that can be affiliated with college athletes, because they have a lot of content in the alcohol space, in the gambling space. Certainly they have that. But, there's been a lot of stuff in the national narrative that, college athletes cannot do deals because schools don't want to have affiliations with sin companies. And that's usually alcohol, cannabis, and gambling, and maybe adult entertainment and stuff like that. So, we dug into the Florida law here. The Florida law seems to allow anyone that's over the age of 21 to do a deal. It still needs to be approved by the school, but Florida law doesn't prohibit it in and of itself. So Trent, this question's more for you. Let's say, as I think what happens, Jose reached out to Nikosi, and then, you and Jose, Trent and Jose were working this out. What was the process of getting this deal approved by the school? Was that something that was difficult, that took a while?
Actually, very, very fluent and easy. Over at First Round, we have a really good relationship with the school athletic director and compliance. And Jose has a great relationship over at FAU with the athletic director. So very fluent and very easy to approve. Every deal we do, whether it's, this deal or others, paperwork is involved, where you send it to compliance, they look it over, contract, and they approve it. Now, they can decline it, like you said, obviously. Everything's very fluent with us, just because of the relationships we have with both, whether it's UM athletic department or FAU athletic department compliance. Everything is very fluent.
Nope. Did anybody say anything like, hey, this is an alcoholic deal? Like, did anybody key you that this is the first deal of its type? Jose, I think you're raising your hand over here.
Literally, when the NIL happened, I texted the AD of FAU, Brian White. It was like 2 or 3 weeks. Oh, actually, it was the second week of July, after July 1. And I said to him, I'm like, hey, Isla Mirada Beer Company, the only athlete I want to do a deal with and work with is Nikosi. Are you guys cool with that? And his text message was, yes, Florida Atlantic allows alcoholic. We as a university allow alcoholic deals with players over the age of 21. And that's all he said. And I said, cool. And the rest was history. Like, working with a small school and us being alumni of the school really did help out a lot, because I was, I've done events with Brian White, and it was very easy. And actually, Trent was the one who told me, like, in a phone call, he's like, bro, after we signed the contract or we're talking about the contract, he's like, bro, you do realize that this is going to be the first alcohol NIL deal. And like Trent said, I was just expecting, okay, cool, Sunset, no, Palm Beach Post, cool. But no, it was more than that.
Jose, I appreciate that. Trent, did anybody tell you, like, hey, get ready for this media firestorm that's about to happen?
That's funny. So Jose wanted me to reach out and push it to some outlets. We both kind of, it was a group effort there as far as getting it out. I'm driving to class one morning, and I'm thinking of who else I can really push it to. I'm walking to class, and I think Darren Heitner. Darren Heitner, I've known since probably last year. I connected with him.
Darren Heitner is a good friend of the show. We know Darren very well.
Yeah. I had reached out to him over text out of the blue, just randomly. I said, hey, Darren, you know, we connected last year. Hope all is well. I just wanted to let you know what's about to happen. And as soon as he saw that, he immediately responded and said, no, this is going to blow up like crazy. And that's when he had tweeted about it. And I think he was kind of the one that really blew it up also for us. He was a huge help in that. And I really appreciate it. Shout out to Darren for that. Awesome, awesome guy.
Kosi, you've got Air Force coming up. How are you feeling? How's the team feeling? I'm excited to see. I mean, you gotta have this kind of sense of everybody's watching you now. I mean, this is on TV too. I think the Air Force game is FS2, Fox Sports 2. So, hey,
Florida,
I mean,
Florida was on television, Mike. Let's not forget about this.
Yeah, Florida was televised. Yeah,
I'm very excited, and I think the team is ready. From what I know, we haven't won on the road in a while, so. So we're definitely looking forward to it to start a new streak, because going into Georgia Southern's game, apparently they were the one who started our losing streak, and we were on the 4-game losing streak. So that's where the losing streak stopped at. They started it and we stopped it with the same team. So we plan to do that with Air Force.
Nikosha, we want to be very mindful of your time. You've been lovely to have on, Trent, Jose. And listen, keep pushing the envelope here, the three of you. I know you guys are pretending you don't watch Entourage. I know you do, but this is like the team. You know, you have like the three of you just pushing the envelope in the alcoholic space. So I love to see it happen. You know, we don't have an official beer sponsor of this podcast, but like, I don't know. I'll drink some Isla Mirada if you want to send it my way, Jose. I'm happy to drink some and promote it, wear that lime green shirt. You know, we're going to be talking about Isla Mirada a little bit more, but I love to see it. And thank you so much, guys, for popping on. Any parting thoughts as we put this in the books, guys?
I just want to say thank you guys for having me on. And I really appreciate everything.
Of course.
I just want to say that we're in a society that, you know, we're always expecting college students to do the wrong thing and to be crazy and drinking and, you know, just fraternities, sororities. I was in Greek life, and, you know, there's a lot of good things that college students do. Right now, two amazing young men broke the internet, created history, and, you know, they're promoting a beer company. And Nikosi, and we know that, Nikosi told us, I don't really even drink that much. And I said, that's fine. You don't have to drink. And he's promoting the company. He's promoting safe drinking. And, you know, as a society, I think that we need to focus on the positive that the NIL is doing for these players, the families of the players, the families of the student athletes. I mean, I just hope everybody focuses on the positive instead of like, oh, they're getting a scholarship and they're getting paid. No, that's not it. It's helping out a student athlete. I want to thank Nikosi and Trent for being amazing young men.
You'll never hear that from this podcast. We're very much in support of player empowerment. Nikosi, you have a bright future ahead of you. Trent, you as well. Jose, it only goes down from here, my man. Just kidding. So listen, it was lovely having you guys on. Isla Mirada, if you guys want, we'll drink to this when the podcast comes out. It should come out in a couple of days. My pleasure having you guys on. Hopefully we meet again all time soon.
Thanks for joining us, Kosi.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Go put up 5 touchdowns on Air Force.
At least.
Mike, you know what? We're all about history on this podcast. So we have Nikosi Perry, the first college athlete to sign an alcoholic deal. And you know what? I think we just became the first sports law podcast, because there are so many. There are so many podcasts. But the first sports law podcast, the first sports law website to have a college athlete on. And obviously, we're talking about NIL. What'd you think of Kosi, Jose, you know, the whole team?
I thought it was great. I think it's an amazing company. You know, Isla Mirada is definitely forward thinking. Awesome that he broke he broke a little news to us that he's going to be signing a female student athlete from FAU soon. It's definitely a forward-thinking company. And the local aspect, I like the local aspect of it, you know, working with Kosi and working with, you know, even his teammates and his family and his friends. And I think it was awesome. I was glad that we were able to make this work.
Yes, over here. And you know, credit to you guys. The one episode I missed, we pop up with an Isla Morada wants to reach out to us. So, you know, I guess it is. No offense taken over here that episode blew up, but, you know, it's fine. I'm not personally offended. I didn't cry myself to sleep. It's totally fine. So programming note, obviously, we had Dan on the first part of the podcast. We had you on the last half of the podcast. As a reminder, our podcast is sponsored by Themis Bar Review. Just like Isla Morada and Conduct Detrimental are breaking barriers and rewriting the sports law space, the NIL space, Themis Bar Review is taking over. That's my prediction, Mike. Themis Bar Review will take over the world. Not just the bar prep world, the world. Okay, that's my prediction here.
Not just that, but a little news on our Themis partnership here. We have a website. If you're interested more about Themis, please go to themisbar.com/condetrimental and check out all information about Themis. We talk about Themis. You can check them out on social media. But now if you want to find out a little more, themisbar.com/condetrimental.
So I was talking to our contact over at Themis. I won't shout her out unless she wants me to. She'll tell me after the podcast. But I was saying, I'm like, we just did this cool St. Louis Rams relocation episode with all these interesting kind of like bar problems and unjust enrichment. I'm like, you guys should put like these sports law essays just for fun for people to have. So listen, we're trying to make the world a better place. Mike, you're smiling. I would sign up for a bar prep course that had these sports law problems, even though Themis is already amazing. We're going to make them
absolutely
amazing. We're going to give them all of our ideas and all of our brain power. So as we go in to wrap this episode, we've covered a lot. And Dan, I told Dan, Mike, you know as well, our St. Louis Rams relocation episode is the most popular episode we've had in the history of Conduct Detrimental. So we're going to hit that episode again. We have some guests that have lined up from St. Louis and some other areas, but certainly an issue worth touching. Mike, let me kick it to you. Legal life advice. I'm told you have a story and you have not told me what it's about.
I think a big thing for this is directly, you know, for law students, anybody who's interested in law, and as you're getting to law school, maybe your route is interest, you know, your interest is sports law, and that's why you're listening to this podcast right now. That's why you went to law school. I think Trent is a good example of that. Trent's not even in law school yet, and he's making waves in the sports law world with his NIL deal here with Isla Morada and Kosi. I mean, you're going to go throughout, you know, your life or law school or whatever, and you might have people telling you one way or another about how to break into the industry. And you know Dan's story, you know Dan Wallach's story, sometimes it takes a long time, sometimes it's very quick. I mean, Trent's a good example of he's breaking through the industry before even going to law school, or even in law school yet. So I think make your connections, follow what you want to do, and definitely don't be afraid to jump into a market, even if you're 22, 23, follow what you want to do. And hopefully that's why you're listening to this podcast right now.
Just to add on that, I was going through my old emails for something for my New York Law School class on Monday. I had to search, the search term I needed was baseball arbitration. I was doing something for class. I have that on my resume from years back. So I saw, Mike, you're going to laugh. And like Stephanie is my witness to this. I was just giggling in the office. Like I sent out maybe like, I don't know, probably over 1,000 cold emails to people like, hey, I used to work in baseball arbitration. This was when I was a 1L, 2L, 3L. And you keep firing and firing and firing. You might not get the job, but you'll be on the radar. And some of those cold emails I sent to people are people that I speak to now pretty regularly and remember me as the guy that sent them this email. And I had an informational call, but I didn't, it was kind of embarrassing, a little cringy about how many emails I sent. You know, you got to take as many shots as you can, right? What is, they say shooters got to shoot, you got to shoot to score. And like, you know, I fired off a lot of bullets and, you know, later down the road, 10 years later, you know, some of those contacts are even now finally starting to pay off. So definitely a good lesson. Mike, anything?
Wayne Gretzky missed 100% of the shots you don't take.
Isn't that Michael Scott?
Wayne Gretzky, Michael Scott.
Wayne Gretzky, Michael Scott. Mike, anything else to add before we put this episode in the books?
No.
For myself, Dan Lust, I'm at Sports Lust. Dan Wallach is at Wallach Legal. Mike is at Mike_son_of_law. As always, if you have anything you want to contribute to the site, we have some great articles up. We are at conductdetrimental.com. Email us at condetrimental@gmail.com if you want to write for the site. And we'll see you next week on another episode of Conduct Detrimental.